This is 48th in the series, the story of Amnon and Tamar, children of David, and it's found in mostly in Perek Yud Gimel in Shmuel Bez. One of the more despicable and inexplicable acts that we find in Tanakh. On one level, it's hard to understand. On another level, it's all too human. It's Musar, about sin and human nature. And yet, it's also symptomatic of the personal difficulties that afflicted David HaMelech as king, especially in the aftermath of the sin with Bathsheba. Just look at number 3, see how Chazal approached the subject. So Bar Megillah says in Daf Chafei Amid Beis, Masay Amnon v'Tamar Nikra Mitargem. Mishnah said it's not Nikra V'Lom, it's not explained. The episode of Amnon and Tamar is read and explained. So where's Pshita? Ma'u d'teimo leichol shli kari de David. Maybe we'll think we'll be choshesh for David's honor that this happened to his children. From Ashmalon, that we're not. Okay, so now the Gemara says, I missed the mem. Ma'isa David v'Amnon lo nikrin v'lo mitargamin. The episode of David and Amnon is neither read nor explained. V'Amrit Ma'isa Amnon v'Tamar nikru mitargamin. But we just said it is read and explained. Lo kasha. Hodichsiv Amnon ben David, hodichsiv Amnon stamo. To refer to the event as Amnon, so we speak about it. Amnon ben David, it's too much of an offense to David HaMelech to make mention of this. Background, so after everything, Acharei Kefaros HaKol, with the Uriah and Bathsheba and their child who died, and the birth of Shlomo, all of which took place against the backdrop of the war with Ammon, eventually at the end of Perek Yud Beis, David himself goes and conquers Ammon, and he takes the king's crown for himself, puts it on his own head, and he takes spoils, and he takes captives, and he puts them at hard labor as an intimidation to other surrounding tribes and nations as a deterrent, and in fact it works. And now our story begins. It's number 1. Vayach Rechein, after this battle, Ula Avshalom ben David, Achos Yafa, Ushmah Tamar. Avshalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister, and her name was Tamar. Amnon was David's Bechor, as we learned earlier in the Sefer. His mother was Achinoam. He was David's first child. Who was Tamar? Who was Avshalom? So they were David's children, but from Macha. Now Macha was the Ephastor. If you turn the page and look at 14, I'm sorry, look at 11, we'll keep going back and forth to this. It's the Gemara which deals with the case. It's in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph. Om Rav Yudam Arav, Tamar Bas Yefas Toar Haysa. Tamar was the daughter of Yefas Toar. The Yefas Toar, briefly we know, is a woman, who's non-Jewish woman, who's taken captive by a Jewish soldier on the field of battle. And according to the law of the Torah, at the beginning of Kitetze, that's Machlokas Rishonim, but let's assume for our purposes here, the soldier in question is allowed to live with her one time, and then he has to separate from her, and she undergoes a process of withdrawal, let her hair grow, let her nails grow to become unattractive to him. If she wants to stay, wants to convert, then she converts, becomes a regular wife. So Tamar was the daughter of a Yefas Toar, which means, we'll get back to this a little while, which means that technically her mother was not Jewish when she was conceived. And therefore, she was converted, and as such would be eligible to marry another one of David's children. But let's continue the story, and we'll see what happens. Vayehaveh Amnon ben David. Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Vayetze la'amnon l'schalos bavur tamar achoso kiv sulohi. Amnon became lovesick. He lusted after Tamar to the point that literally became ill. Vayipalei v'aynei Amnon la'asos la'me'umo. But it was impossible for Amnon to do anything about it. Nothing more painful than unrequited love. Of course, there are other factors here as well. And part of it is that the status of Tamar is not fully known. Now, let's just go back. I mentioned one point. The Gemara continues. Shenemar. When he finally came upon her, she said, "Don't do this. Talk to the king. The king will not prevent me from marrying you. Why? If we would think she's eligible to marry Amnon, how could she marry her? How could she marry him? She is his sister." It must be that she was a daughter of Yefas Tohar. Rashi explains in 14, Achosav Sholom Bas Yefas Tohar Haiso. Kodam Shinizgair Belev Sholem. She was the daughter of the Yefas Tohar before she was converted sincerely. Macha Imo Yoldalo Ladovid as Tamar. Macha, her mother, gave birth to her to David. So that was her status, Yefas Tohar, and then she stayed, Malcha, became David's wife. There's some complications. Tosus disagrees. Tosus number 16, it's the Gemara, it's still in Sanhedrin, says at the end, Al Kainir Lememar de Tamar lo haiso bas David. Sheima kvar haiso muberes kishe bas la milchama. Tosus concludes for a variety of reasons that Tamar was not David's daughter at all, but rather he adopted her and raised her. But Macha, when David lived with her on the battlefield, was already pregnant with Tamar, another father. See, another father, another mother. So therefore, she's technically a stranger to Amnon, notwithstanding they grew up in the same house, like a Woody Allen scenario almost. In the same house, but they're not really related to each other. She, because she grew up in the palace and was raised by David as a daughter, so she's construed as a princess. What happens, unfortunately, is, a fatal attraction. She became very ill, Amnon. Couldn't do anything about it. Ul Amnon Rea, back in number one, Amnon had a friend, Ushmo Yonadav ben Shema Achi David. His name was Yonadav, the son of Shema, David's brother. So in fact, Yonadav and Amnon were first cousins. The Yonadav Ish Chacham Me'od. Yonadav was a very wise person. As the Gemara continues, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yudah Marav, Ish Chacham Lirisha. He was wise in his evil, meaning he was clever. He was sinister. He knew how to manipulate the system. Ish Chacham Me'od, but Lirisha. What did he do? Vayomer lo. So Yonadav said to Amnon, Madu ata kocha dal. Why are you so downtrodden, so depressed? Ben Amelech, you're the son of the king. Baboker, baboker, morning after morning. Hello, Tagidli, tell me what's on your mind. Vayomer lo, Amnon said to him, Es tamar achos avshalom, ochi ani ohev. I love Avshalom, I love Tamar, the sister of Avshalom. Now, he calls Avshalom ochi, because in fact, according to Rashi, they're the same father. Different mothers, but same father, so they're natural brothers. According to Rashi, Tamar, though, being a Bas Yefas Tohar, was therefore not halachically a child of David, and therefore, even though they would have had the same father, they could marry each other, since she was non-Jewish at the time of conception and birth. Tosfos maintains entirely she wasn't even David's natural, biological child, so it's not an issue altogether. What could we do? Vayomer lo Yonadav shchav al mishkavcha v'hischol. He gave him this advice: lie in bed and pretend that you're sick. Uva v'ichol erosecha. Your father David will come in to see you. For matay lov, you'll say to him, Tavona Tamar achosi, let my sister Tamar come. V'tavreni lechem, let her prepare some food for me. She'll make a meal in front of me. Leman asher ereh v'achalti miyado, so I may see her and eat from her hand. So Yonadav presented this solution to David. Why did he say it? Motivation is good, motivation is bad. Most of Chazal and the Gemara assumes it was Lurisha. It was to give Amnon a pretext to get Tamar into his chamber and do what he wanted. The Malbim has a different approach. The Malbim says in 9, it's the bottom of the first page, the Malbim says, V'martoi lov, Tavona Tamar Chosi Bemes Lo Ola Al Das Yonadav Sheyase Hanivola Zos. Really, Yonadav did not have in mind that Amnon should rape Tamar. Rak Som Befiv Dvarav Shemitochom Yakir Amelech Shuchoshek B'Tamar Choso V'Chol Avura Ad Maves. Yonadav suggested, the Malbim says, put in David's head that you're so attracted to Tamar, so drawn to her, in a kosher way, that he'll see to it that you marry her, and therefore nothing will be untoward or offensive. Uvoze yeda sheyitnena lo liisha acha shemuteres lo min adin, and he'll give her to you as a wife, since she is permissible to you. Okay, that was Yonadav's plan. Now, part of the problem inherent in the plan, of course, was Tamar's consent. Tamar raised in the house of David. David, for all the things that we read in the Navi, is David HaMelech, named Zmiras Yisrael. So it was a holy environment in which he was raised. Go back to number 4, and look, this is on Pasuk Beis, that he became sick, lovesick for Tamar, he was Sulahi, she was a virgin. So Radak says, he desired her because she was pristine. She had no suitors at all. Some say that's why the word vayipole, which means astonished or difficult or here impossible, even though he did what he did, klomar niflobeinov hadavar, it was a puzzle to him, a conundrum that could not be resolved. Hech yuchal lishkavima, how would he be able to sleep with Tamar? Kilo haisa yotza mi beisa, she never left the house. Ki psula, she was a virgin. V'derech apsulos biyisrael lios tsnuos babayis, the way of the maidens of Israel, they stay modestly in the home, certainly the princesses. V'lo tetzen achutzo, they don't come out. So Yonadav oyachachom bal tachbulos, he was diabolically clever. V'yatz amnon tachbulos shetavol lefanav. So it wasn't just accommodating Amnon that was Yonadav's plan. He had to devise a method whereby Tamar will be lured out of the palace and seclude herself with Amnon. That was his plan that he suggested. V'chein hoyo, v'yishkav Amnon, he lay down, v'yishchol, he pretended to be ill. V'yavo ha-melech liraso, the king came to look after his oldest son. V'yomer Amnon el ha-melech, Amnon said to the king, Tavona Tamar achosi, let Tamar, my sister, come. Let her prepare 2 latkes, and I'll eat out of her hand. It's interesting, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, I didn't cite it here, but the Gemara says that she fried these latkes for him. Why? A week early for Chanukah. Why did she fry and not cook? Why did he ask for fried food? and not cook food? So the Mefarshim explain, what's that? No. The Mefarshim explained that cook food, let's say she cooked it in the palace and brought it to him, it would be cold. But she could do that because cooked food stays hot longer. But fried food cools off very quickly. See, Dafka asked for fried food because this way she'd have to cook in his presence. Vayishlach David al Tamar abayso lemor. So David sent a message to Tamar back in the palace. L'chino abayso Amnon achich vasilo abirya. Go to your brother Amnon and make a meal for him, a light meal. Vatelech Tamar pasukches beis Amnon achia ushochev. So she went to the chamber of Amnon, her brother, and he's lying down. Vatikaches apotzek vatolosh. She took the dough and she kneaded it. Vatelabev b'enov, and she cooked it in his sight. Vativashel aselavivos, and she prepared the latkes for him. Then she took the pan, the frying pan, poured it before him, and he refused to eat. Amnon said, remove everybody from here. I want to be alone with her. And everybody left, all his attendants. Maybe he's crown prince. He's a crown prince. Vayomer Amnon el Tamar, havi habirya acheder, bring the meal into my room, ve'evre miyodech, and I'll consume it, I'll eat it from your hand. She did. She didn't suspect anything. Shamar is very chaste, very modest. That's how she was raised. Vatikva, in retrospect, naive. Vatik, it's her brother too, right? It's her brother also. Vatikach Tamar es halavivos asher asasa, and she took the latkes that she'd made, vatovei l'Amnon achia hachedra, and she brought it to Amnon, her brother, to his room. Vatigash elov lechol, so then he approached in order to eat, vayachazek bo, and he grabbed her. Vayomerlo, and he said to her, boi shichvi miachosi, come and sleep with me, my sister. Vatomerlo, and she said to him, Alochi, no, my brother. Al ta'aneni, don't rape me, don't violate me. Ki lo ye'osachem b'Yisrael, such a thing should not be done in Israel. Al ta'aseh esanavala azos, don't commit this abomination. Vani, for me, ona olichas cherposi, where will I then go with my shame? Va'to tiyek achad hanavalim b'Yisrael, and you'll be considered as one of the low lives in Israel. Speak to the king, the Pasuk Gemara quoted. The king will not prevent you from marrying me, or prevent me from marrying you. The king will endorse it. So please do that. He refused to listen to her. He grabbed her and he forcibly violated her. Amnon literally was possessed. There's no doubt about it. He was possessed by a compulsion that he could not control, swept away by what in his own mind was love, and he was impervious to her importunings or her reasoning. Now, the Abarbanel says in 5, she used 3 arguments to try to dissuade him from attacking her. It's Pasuk Yud Beis. Says Gimel Tainos Chazakos L'Shein Roy Lasosa. 3 reasons why it's not fitting for him to do it. Pechod mi pas amase, the deed itself. Sheini mi pas kvodo, her honor. Shlishi mi pas kvodo, his honor. And that's what the pasuk says. Im mi pas amase omro, in terms of the act itself. Alochi al taneni, the act itself is an abhorrent one. It's repugnant. All right, v'hu nemar b'tmios. He answered almost disingenuously. Kilu amra v'chein cho achi. Am I not your brother? Halo achi ato. L'chein en roi shetaneni. You're my brother. Therefore, it's not fit that a brother should rape a sister. Such a thing should not be done amongst the Jewish people. That was the first argument, that the act itself is, on its face, repulsive. Then, she said, what's going to happen to me? It's beneath my honor as a princess of Israel to be subjected to this type of treatment. Milvad hachet, there's me to consider. Why would you do this to me if in fact you profess this love for me? And third, it's not l'fi chavotcha to do such a thing. You, the crown prince, will be acting as one of the low lives in Israel. So in fact, for a young woman put on the spot, she made a very compelling case, because she used every possible argument that would appeal to him. It's asur, it's despicable inherently. Think about me. If you love me, you wouldn't do this, because I'll just be ashamed. And third, about you. How could you do such a thing? It's not l'fi chvodcha. Nonetheless, doesn't mention the king. Well, that was the pasuk says, that she said, talk to the king. The king is not going to prevent you from marrying me. Now, it's interesting that today, you know, the modern approach is to perceive rape as a crime of violence, as a power, and not at all a crime of sexual lust. All right, best known in the aversion to the comment, it's inappropriate in any event, that, you know, the women bring it on themselves by dressing provocatively. There was a time, the 40s and 50s and 60s, where that was the norm. And in fact, when police would investigate such a case, or a rapist would be tried, that would be a factor. That would be evidence in the case. How provocative the woman was dressed. By the 70s, that fell out of favor. So much so that today it's considered irrelevant and immaterial how a woman dressed, because it's held almost as a matter of course that has nothing to do with lust and has to do with power and violence. But like anything else that exists in the modern life, it's not entirely true. Violence would mean you attack someone, period, with a gun, a knife, fist, etc. When you rape someone, it's a crime of sexual violence. So there is some aspect of lust involved, but it's in a certain context. It's an aggression that has a sexual component. Now that she recognized to you, that's what Pasuk is telling us, that she recognized that she is going to be forced, so she's using arguments to deflect both his aggressive desires, it's not l'fi chvodcho, as well as his sexual desires. The king is not going to prevent you. So in fact, if you love me, you desire me as a wife, desire even just to live with me, and there's a way to do it beheter. It's a way to do it which is proper. So in fact, she recognized, you see from Psukim at least, both components. The sexual aspect as well as the aggressive aspect, which today, Zaga Burkh is denied in the world. So he did what he did. What's the result? So now you have one of the most fascinating phenomenon that, of course, lives on in our literature in several different ways. By Yisnoeh Amnon Sinogadolo Meod, Amnon, right afterwards, he loved her passionately before, right after he raped her, he hated her Sinogadolo Meod, with a great hatred. Kigadolo Hasinah Asher Sneo Me'ava Asher Aiva, the hatred with which he hated her was stronger than the love with which he loved her. Vayomer lo Amnon, kumi lechi. Amnon said to her, get up and go. Now the Gemara puts it into a somewhat graphic context. Back in number 11, in Sanhedrin Chaf Aleph Amad Aleph, Vayisnoe Amnon sinogadolo meod, he hated with a great hatred, my taima, Amr of Yitzchak, Nima Nikshirlo, Vasato Khrushchevcha, that during the act of violence, she was able, with one of her hairs, to dismember him. So he was wounded as a result, almost castrated, and therefore that's why, because of the physical violence that she was able to perpetrate on him, in order to try to keep him away, even unsuccessfully, so that's why he hated her. He hated her because of the resistance. That's what the Gemara says, and the Gemara stands on its own. Certainly is true, and it fits in with the Psukim. But there's obviously something here that is even more than that. So Ralbag says, it's in number 10, that Ralbag seems to indicate, I'm sorry, Ralbag is number 6, that she resisted. It seems clear that she utilized all her strength in order to resist his will, and maybe she pained him, she grieved him through this resistance, which in fact, as the Gemara says, where she embarrassed him, shamed him, as or God forbid happens, scream at the person, insults. That's why he hated her. She already said to him, you'll be a noble, you'll be a lowlife, contemptible. So in fact, if she said to him, if you do this, you'll be contemptible, and he did it, it means he's a lowlife. He is contemptible. She said even worse things to him. Because of the abundance of hatred that he had, Amnon now sent her out of the house in a degrading way. The measure of hatred is not to speak at all to anyone. So the Gemara goes a different area, that we define an oyev, an enemy, as a person who doesn't speak to someone for 3 days intentionally. So much so that if that person kills b'shogeg, we assume it wasn't b'shogeg, because the Torah says ulo oyev lo. So he didn't speak. It's talking later on about Avshalom and Amnon. Radak gets a different point in 10. Zos hasina oisa siba meis Hashem kidei lahagdil acherpa b'sholchos amibeso. This hatred was almost divinely inspired, that Amnon should hate her so as to increase the shame and increase the animosity of Avshalom to Amnon. The Avshalom yoser sone oso admaves achachashav lahargo. So Avshalom should hate Amnon to the death, so that he should eventually kill him. And Radak says a point we'll get back to later. This is one of the punishments that David had to endure because of the Maase Batsheva. Okay. All this is very true. What the Rabag says and what the Radak says, that she attacked him, she resisted both verbally and physically, inflicting pain and a wound upon him. Or, that's Rabag, like Radak says, he hated her in order to, it was a divinely inspired in order to provoke Avshalom's rage. We'll see in a moment, Tamar pleads not to be rejected, but there's something else as well, of course. And that is the most intense hatred that people ever have, is self-hatred that's projected onto someone else. People loathe themselves, so, and you see that certainly with many of the killers in the world. It's not they hate their anonymous victims. They really hate themselves. And when they're attacking someone else, in effect, they're just transferring their anger towards themselves and their self-loathing to that other person. And that's really Amnon here. Amnon had his lust satisfied, but having listened to Tamar's arguments that it's wrong, it's a nevala b'Yisrael, and you'll be like one of the lowlives, when he did it, he realized that she was correct. That in fact, that's what he had become. and therefore he hated himself for his own conduct. So she, who was now a reminder to him of his sin, was too painful to look at, even to relate to, much less to marry. That's why you find also, you know, in the modern world, a teenager gets pregnant and they marry their lover, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old. What is the success rate for that marriage? Not too good. It's not too good. It doesn't endure long because it comes from a different premise altogether. Now, this case of Amnon and Tamar is a prototype familiar to us from Pirkei Avos in the fifth parak, Mishnah Tazayin, number 7 in the handout. Kol ava sheituya b'davar batel davar b'tela ava. Any love which is dependent on something, once that something is nullified, the love is nullified along with it. V'sheina tzuliya b'davar, eina b'tela la'olam. But if it's independent, unconditional love, then that love never ends. A zoi ava tzuliya b'davar, what's the unconditional love? What is the conditional love? A tzuliya b'davar, zo avas Amnon v'tamar. That's the love of Amnon v'tamar. V'sheina tzuliya b'davar, zo avas David v'yonasan. And that's not dependent on anything. That's the love of David and Yehonasan. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, it's interesting to understand the Mishnah from a number of perspectives. First, what's the Chiddush really? What's the Chiddush? Ava she'tuli b'davar, a conditional love, so you remove the condition, the love is gone too. Why is that a Chiddush? Why is that so astounding? I mean, that would seem to be the obvious conclusion. Secondly, it's interesting that they're presented as the prototypes of Ava Shena Tzuliya B'davar. Because the problem here is not Ava. The problem here is rape. And the Chait was not just that's the real problem. It's not that they're symbols of an unconditional love. Where was the love? You don't even see that Tamar loved him. You don't even see that he necessarily loved her. He clearly lusted for her. But you don't see necessarily that he loved her. So what's the answer? You see that the chait here is not just the maisa. The chait of Amnon, and why this is a symbol of this type of malady, is a lack of self-control. The only problem that Amnon had was that he had to have her immediately. He could not wait. It's a tremendous problem in society, you know. Lack of self-control. People are able to maintain a sense of discipline about their lives. They'll get more often than not what they want. Just have to go about it in a clever, proper way. But if they do not, and they try to seize what's not theirs, then in fact they run into all sorts of problems. One of our members gave me a t-shirt years ago that had on it a saying from Dennis Prager, the talk show host, that said on it, "We produce a better brand of citizen in this country if we worried more about our if we worried less about our children's self-esteem and more about our children's self-control," which is really true. We do a lot of things to build their self-esteem, but not much to instill in them a sense of discipline. Outside, by the way, our world, not that our children are free of problems, but you grow up in a halachic system, is built in a sense of discipline. As every parent knows, you go to the supermarket and you see kids screaming at their mothers for this candy, not that candy, and the mothers are screaming back, and there's a tug of war, but there's a way to avoid it in our case. It's not kosher. Child hears it's not kosher, and that's the end of the story. They write, oh, not kosher, something else. Of course, if it's something that is kosher, can't tell them it's not, but that's the end of the discussion. That sense of discipline is ingrained in our children from an early age. Not that they don't have other issues to deal with. They do, but it has to be done in any event. Now, Chait once said that there are two parts to a sin, to a chait, as we know. There's the instinctual desires, the Yetzer Hara, which gives us the motivation for the chait. But every chait involves also a distortion of the mind, which tells the person that without this particular action or deed or acquisition, he cannot live. that he needs this particular situation in order to improve his life. And what that means is that the person talks it into himself that there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me that if I get this, I won't be in a better state. So it's the act. It's the external situation which has to be rectified and nothing within me. Once a person is convinced of this, that my happiness lies in getting that, then there's really no stopping him, except, of course, the halacha. If a person is faithful to the halacha, that will stop him. It's a very fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin of Ayin Heyam and Aleph. It's not unfortunate sheet. But the Gemara is a case where the doctors said about a particular person that they said this person is going to die unless he sees this woman naked. And the Chacham said, Yomos, let him die. And the doctor said, all right, all he wants to do is speak with her behind the curtain, private. Won't even touch her. Speak with her. And the Rabbanan said, Yomos, let him die. What Amnon had here is a compulsion. It's a compulsion. And a compulsion can never be accommodated, because then it never ends. It just transfers itself from one object to the next object. So you could say, I'm sure a creative posek would say, well, 1 second, to see a woman naked is asur, but it's asur rabbanon, pikuach nefesh. The doctor's saying he can't live without it. Very well and good, but as the Gemara says, we don't demean benos Yisrael. So if that's what it takes to keep him alive, yomus, let him die. That's what it is. How did Amnon overcome Tamar's very logical and compelling arguments, which again attacked the act itself as degrading and claimed her own status as unworthy of this assault, and Amnon's status also as unworthy of being an assailant? As he said, in the language of the Torah, Lo tov heyos adam levado. It's not good for man to be alone. So the Torah recognizes that people have certain needs too. People do have certain needs. And notice, Rabbi Sheikh said, it's an El Shir in itself, that you don't see that the Ava She'ena Tluya B'davar is general marriage between a husband and a wife. Because that very often is totally on something. Something's a good thing. But it very often is totally on something. It's not purely unconditional. Romantic love is never purely unconditional. As much as we think it is, and as much as we might strive for that. In the example that he gave, that I once raised at one of the women's shiurim here, that romantic love is not altruistic love. Because we each want certain things. Altruistic love would mean we only want what's best for the other person, right? In which case, if a situation arose where you would find someone that you'd think would be a better husband or better wife for your spouse, pure altruism would demand that you go to your spouse and say, you know what, I found a better person for you than me. But as those things never happen, it means that romantic love is not altruistic love. The love of David and Yonasan, as we discussed last year, that was a love that was based purely on the appreciation of the personality of the other, without any reciprocity, expectation. It's just the appreciation of a beautiful Tselem Elokim, a person created in the image of God with the right values and the right midos and a chacham. That's a different state entirely. So the Torah recognizes that man has needs. The Gemara says, a person doesn't have a wife, shori, below simcha, below bracha, below tov, etc. So once he said that he needed this and could not live without it, then the only problem becomes, it's nevola b'Yisrael. It's a political problem. How is he going to handle the fallout? So what did he assume? He assumed he would live with her, and then she would consent to marry him, and the king would arrange it. What did he not anticipate? The hatred that he would have. because no one ever thinks they're subject to a compulsion. Everyone else is. We're not. No one ever thinks that this is who I am. These are my needs, legitimate needs. But once it was satisfied, then there was no end. And the hatred that he felt was really a self-hatred that was just projected onto her. Notice how plaintively she cries out to him. Back to what? But Tomer Lo, she said to him, after he said, get lost, Al odos haragdola zos meacheres asher asisim l'shalcheini. She said, don't do this greater evil than you've already done to me to send me away. V'lo avolu shmo'alo. He didn't want to listen to her at all. What's the greater evil? Say, here you satisfied your lust, but you did it from your perspective on the basis of this tremendous love that you felt for me, a desire to marry me. Now you'll have your way with me and throw me away? How could that be? Vayikros naro misharso vayomer shulchuno azos me'ala achutza. He called his lads to come in, said, take her out. Una'ol hadela sachareo. Lock the door after her. She was wearing just a fine tunic, not a coat. Some say that he threw her out with just a dress, not anything else. And the Benos Melch always wore finer outfits. He tossed her out and locked the door after her. That was the hatred that he had there. She took ashes, put it on her head, and on the ksonas pasim she wore karaa, she tore. Reflected, by the way, of this week's sedra by Yesha, we'll go back to it in a moment. She put her hand to her head, left, and she was crying. Now, we'll get to the aftermath in a little while. Amnon's problem, of course, is that people are always blind to the Tluya B'davar. Because Tluya B'davar means that they need something they don't have. It means somehow they are defective. So he thought he needed Tamar only for his satisfaction, and then he'd be happy as well. But Batel Davar, Batel Ha'ava, the compulsion is such that the very attainment of the compulsion nullifies it, and everything dissipates. Now, if you look at number 8, the Rambam, on this mission of Avos, he says something very interesting. Perish Eilat Dvarim Kachu, to explain this Mishnah. Atoyo Dea She'elu Asibos Hagashmios Yevatlu V'yosuru V'yischayev Sur Mischadesh B'sur Siboso. He said, these Gashmi things, that they're going to disappear. They can't be sustained. They can't be a legitimate cause, a permanent cause of anything. But if love is based on some divine, some metaphysical matter, a real connection of souls, then it's not going to dissipate at all. If you note the Rambam's language, it seems he read the Mishnah differently. Ko'ava shituya bedover butel. Ava, which is based on something which is butel. What's butel? Ephemeral emotions, compulsions, things. Something gashmi is going to dissipate and disappear. So if that's the case, then betela ava. That ava is going to be nullified as well. It can't be sustained. And that, of course, we also know. A love that is created and sustained by nothing more than beauty or wealth or status. Once the beauty's gone, or the wealth is gone, or the status is gone, subitei la'ava. And even in terms of marriage, it has to be based on something that's more profound, more substantive, more significant than just surface issues. That's why you always question. And you see, in the world itself, is such a premium that's placed on appearances. Appearance is important too, but when appearances become the ikker, then the foundation for the marriage is not there. What's the outcome? of this sorry event. So let's look back at the Gemara, number 11. First, this effected quite a change in Jewish life. We're about in the Gemara, we're about 6 lines from the bottom. Batikach tamar efa roshok sonas apasim ashila koroa tona mishmei rabbi yeshua ben karcha geder gadol gidra tamar ba'osa shah. Tamar and others made a fence at this time. They were able to enact a precautionary measure. Amru livnos milochim kach livnos hedyotos alach haskame v'kamo. If this is what happens to princesses, that they can be attacked like this, it certainly could happen to commoners who are alone with men. Im litznuos kach, if this happens to chaste women like Tamar, lefruitzos alachas kama v'kama, be even worse for those who are unchaste. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Bosa Shah, Gozer al Yichav al Pnuya. At that time there goes there the halacha of the Yichav Pnuya, that a man is not allowed to seclude himself with any woman, even an unmarried woman. See, there was no iser to seclude oneself with an unmarried woman, because theoretically you can marry her too. Now, iser yichav pnuyos. Mar says, yichav daraisu? It's daraisu. What does it mean in gezeira now? Elaima gozra yichav pnuya. The yichav of a married woman, so that's always daraisu. The yichav of a pnuya, that was a gezeira that emerged as a result of this case. Rashi says in 12, Gidra Tamar b'dimaso v'zakaso, through her tears and her cries, v'nog atzma b'vizayon, and she presented herself in a degraded way, to make the point, nosu shar noshim kal v'chomer b'atzman. So the women themselves made the kal v'chomer. Ma b'nos melochim yira kilkul zeh. If this abomination, this travesty, could happen to b'nos melochim, v'diotas lachas kam v'kamo. And the Rambam in Hilchos Yisuri Bia, Perchav Beis, Halacha Gimel, makes the same point. Kishiira Maisa Amon V'Tamar, Gozar David of Eizdil Yichud Penuya. When this event happens, the David, nevertheless, the Isser Yichud Penuya came into existence. That's the first effect. Now, something else happened as well. Let's get a different point. Look at number 15. This from Ariel in the Oz Melech. Very interesting comparison between our psukim here and our sedra this week, because you have a similar event. It's not just the ksonis pasim that Tamar wore and that Yosef wore, but note the similarity in language. There's a whole school of thought today that they love darshaning a symmetry of expression from one place in Tanakh to another. I don't usually indulge in myself, but here you have it. It's a nice idea to entertain. He found it impossible to do anything. What did Yosef say to the Sar Mashkim about Potiphar's wife? Same language. Amnon said, Potiphar's wife said, grabbed his clothing, shichvoi me. Amnon said, Hotziu kolish me'olav, v'yitzu kolish me'olav, send everyone out, he wanted a raper. Yosef said the same thing, but when he said it to send everyone out when he revealed his identity to his brothers. Hotziu kolish me'olav. Alodos haragdola azos, Tamar said, Yosef said to Potiphar's wife, you see in the other phrases also such a symmetry of language between the case here and the events in our sedra. What's the connection? So if you look at 18, Rav Ariel expounds on it. Amnon hamefateh domeh leishes Potiphar. Amnon, the seducer, is similar to Potiphar's wife, who's a seducer. V'tamar doma liYosef. In Vayeshev, Yosef is the victim. Here, Tamar is the victim. You look in the... Yosef escaped. Tamar did not escape. In both cases, the victim was punished. Yosef was imprisoned, and Tamar sat alone, as we'll see, in the house of Avshalom. And now you see the great divergence, because although the superficial events are similar, Dashvahi Nigudit, there's also the antithesis here. Hotzikul Ishmaeloi of Yosef was in order to bring his family together, in order to heal the wounds in the family. Hotzikul Ishmaeloi of Amnon was in order to create a breach in the family, as well as a great breach in Musar Atziburi. Masa Yosef Neged Echob Nasu Kedei LeKarvom, LeKarvom LeBasov, Ulaviyom Pnima. Yosef's actions at the end was to try to draw his brothers near, back into the fold. But Amnon sends Tamar out, discharges her, never wants to see her again. And notice as well that Yosef was a Bechor too, Bechor L'Rachel, and Amnon was the Bechor to David. But Yosef embraced his Bechorah. Amnon rejected his Bechorah. That's the contrast. Now, this of course reflects something else that happens. Let's go back to the text, the Navi in Pasuk Chav, and we'll see the immediate aftermath. Vayomar Eileo Avshalom Achia. Avshalom, who by the way did not like Amnon from the get-go, said to his sister, Ha'aminon Achich Hayoimach, was your brother Aminon, he used a derisive term, was he with you? The answer of course was yes. And now, my sister, you be silent. He's your brother. Don't worry yourself over this matter. And Tamar lived devastated, desolate, in the house of Shalom, her brother. What was David's reaction? He heard what happened. He was very angry. What did he do? Nothing. So the Malbim says in 9, Vamelech David, I'm sorry, 19th, top left. Vamelech David charolo me'od, ulam lo chichol zeh. He did not rebuke Amnon. V'chol zeh orer sinas Avshalom. All this aroused Avshalom's enmity. Why did David say nothing? David was incapacitated. David is mourning over his own chait, and therefore, in effect, he left the door open to Avshalom to act. Now this continues the payback, so to speak, the onesh that David was told he would sustain arbatayim fourfold for what he did to Uriah and Bathsheba. And look at 17, as Rav Ariel makes the point. Avshalom bolemet evelos shel Tamar. So he, in fact, enlarges on her mourning, because now she's not fit, in one part because she's not fit to be a princess. But he also stokes the flames. He uses this grievance in order to settle a score with Amnon. And he asks her, in this, he asks about Amnon in that derisive way about Aminon, and then time marches on, and he lets his anger build. He's just waiting for the moment to strike. In any event, we'll get back to that in a second. On shel shel David al chayt Bathsheba boka mido kereged mido. David's punishment, Bathsheba, came measure for measure in each respect. Five things he highlights. One. Hapam pogim beveito pnimo gila ariot ushichas damim. You have, in fact, to whatever David did, ostensibly, without the explanations we gave, arayos with Bathsheba and homicide with Uriah. It happened here too. Arayos with Tamar and Avshalom will kill Amnon. Now in his household, in his family. Just like he was the instigator in his tzara, he is the instigator here too Amnon used his father to bring Tamar to him. Third, Amnon doreis at Tamar betal vatok iluo gaspacherim. He's boastful. He's haughty. The crown prince. Sharei kemelech latida kol mutarlo. The king can take anything. Kelviv. See, he already sees himself as the punitive king, like his father. David took what the Navi says in Eishes Ish, Eishes Uriah. He did it, I could do it too. Amnon, Semo Aminud, Bogei Bachoto. Amnon, Amen, means verification, loyalty, confirmation. He betrays his sister, like David, who in fact had betrayed one of his leading officers. Amnon alech lebal chatzor b'shichut David machnis atzmo legobar rayot v'achiti atzoidim sipro shel David el moto. And just like David sent Amnon to his sent Uriah to his death, so too David in next parak sends Amnon to his death as well to Baal Chatzor. All mida keneged mida. What did Amnon do? So look at number 20. It's an old Sefer Musa, one of the oldest we have. Sefer Tikkun Midos HaNefesh, written by Rav Shlomo Ibn Gabirol, the famous Paitan from 11th century Spain. So he speaks about love, but not love, romantic love. Love is lust. He says, this Midos Ava, kimat shel yimolet min amikra zeh shum adam. Nobody can escape it. We all have compulsions for something. We all lust for different things. The only one who can escape is Misha Sichlo Moshe B'Tivo, a person whose intellect controls, rules his desires. V'zeh nimtso ma'at. And that happens very infrequently. And when it does happen, then one has to be constantly vigilant. And he says a person who gives in to the midah in any event, any situation, he's going to destroy himself. And he mentions this mice of Amnon and Tamar. We see what happens to uncontrolled lust. The only area in which lust is permissible is when it comes to Avodas Hashem and it comes to Talmud Torah. Ki mitoras Hashem chevtzo. Val kolpana mishim is asek binyonei chochma v'musur imavdilim beinam v'vein ataiva. A person who's involved in chochma and musur, so that itself will separate between him and his illicit desires. Well, in fact, what happened to Amnon? Look at number 21. Because the next pasuk says, 2 years went by before Avshalom did anything. The Yerushalmi says in Sota, the third parak, Yesh schus tola shtei shonim. The schus of Talmud Torah can protect people, even sinners. It protected Amnon. As Rabbi Yossi said, 2 years, he got a reprieve. For 2 years, Amnon was involved in Torah. Meaning, strange enough as it sounds, but the whole story is strange, what did Amnon do after this despicable act? He ran to the Beis Medrash. And he spent the next 2 years there because he realized on some level how much he had fallen. Soon enough, though, the end would come. Ibn Gabirol said that the Chacham, the true Chacham, is a person who's moderate, a person who's disciplined. Whenever we have passion that's misplaced outside the realm of Torah, oh, it can be misplaced in Torah also, but outside the realm of Talmud Torah, so it's always trouble. He sought refuge in Torah, but Avshalom was neither assuaged, nor was he impressed, and the next parak, he masterminds the murder of Amnon, and then the next chapter in David's life begins. Once Avshalom kills Amnon, Avshalom then takes flight. And David spends time chasing him, trying to bring him back. He's rebellious. In the end, he's lost as well. But that is the next chapter. As for this parsha, so it's a lesson about compulsions, about lust, about parents. Because we see, as Rav Ariel's point, Rav Ariel made the point so clearly, what Amnon did, in essence, was not much different from what David did. Amnon, in fact, learned from David that maybe they should not be done, but the consequences of their being done are very small. And therefore, he acted. A good reminder to parents that whatever we do, our children pick up on very, very readily, and they learn from all our deeds, and they're able to read our thoughts and even our nuances. And if it happened with Amnon and David, it certainly happens with us. And therefore, it's a lesson not only about the Meluchas Yisrael, but it's a message about every house in Israel as well. Okay. I thank you.